And welcome once again to the Ted Brewer and Austin Brewer Radio Show for this Sunday evening. We're looking forward to having you listening tonight. Of course, my co-host for this Sunday evening is Sharon Brewer, my wonderful wife. So I'll be covering a bunch of stories, and she's got a bunch of stories, and her going to put her perfect spin on her stories. And so we're pretty excited that this is actually another day that we're back on the air again with you guys, and that Austin is doing great. So many of you have been so wonderful, and you've contacted me, and you've called me, and you've asked me so many questions about Austin. And as you know, I wasn't on the air on Friday because Austin had to go back to the hospital because they had given him some incorrect dosing as far as some medication that he was on, and he couldn't get in to see his cardiologist for another week and a half. And so finally the cardiologist. Here's how inefficient the medical system is. Okay, I'm just going to. I got to vent for a second with you guys. They give him incorrect information in the hospital a week ago when he's there. He gets out Monday a week ago. Monday tomorrow will be a week, and they give him incorrect information on the medicine dosing for the pericarditis that he has. And so they turn around and then they won't bring him in for another appointment for another week and a half when he calls in, even though he has incorrect dosing and some of the symptoms are reappearing. So the cardiologist tells him to get readmitted back into the emergency room so he can get information from the cardiologist that way. I mean, unbelievable. So then they contact the cardiologist after Austin's already back in the emergency room. They tell them exactly what to do. You know, then we're released from the emergency room after sitting around the emergency room for 6 hours. I mean, this is the same thing that I talk about all the time with the medical associations and the medical care in the United States. It's really good trauma care. I mean, it was amazing what they did for Austin Friday night a week ago. But then all they want to do at that point after the... Sharon, are you on the air with me?
I'm on the air.
Yeah, you're clicking your phone real bad, sweetheart. And so what happens is people are just, you know, they get into a situation where they don't understand that you get if you continue to take the drugs they tell you to take, there's all kinds of side effects. Like his pulse rate was raised because one of the drugs they were giving him. And I looked up the drug and it said it causes elevated pulse rate. And so I tell the doctor, I say, you know, by the way, one of these drugs caused elevated pulse rate, and Austin's pulse is elevated. Oh, does it? I didn't know that. And then finally, they said, well, you'd like to talk to the pharmacologist, you know, to the pharmacy person. I said, sure. And so then I said, well, that's never going to happen. And it never happened. They never brought the pharmacology person in at all. So I thought that was kind of crazy because they didn't even bother to do what they told me they would do. But they got him out back. We got back out after sitting there for 6 hours, doing pretty much nothing for 6 hours. And then, he's back home again. He's doing great. He's going to be back to work again part-time tomorrow. He said he wants to get back on the show with me again tomorrow at 3 o'clock. But he's doing much, much, much better. So thank you again for all of your prayers. I want to cover a few quick stories with you. And then Sharon's got a bunch of stuff she wants to talk about. Obama blames right-wing radio for making people think that big government is the problem. It's pumped into cars and bars and VFW halls all across America. And not to mention, on the iTunes, that's where we are, the Health Masters play so much on iTunes. President Obama visited Elkhart, Indiana, and during a town hall meeting, he blamed right-wing radio for distorting his economic record and for making people think big government is the problem. He says, I hope you don't mind me being blunt about this, the president said, but I've been listening to this stuff for a while now, and I'm concerned when I watch the direction of our politics. Oh, you mean we're not going to communism and globalism as quickly as you want to go? Are you kidding me? Guys, come on. You know, we all know that we're telling the truth of what's going on. We are telling the truth from a different standpoint that they're not used to. And so now they're in a situation where they don't know what to do or what to say because their mainstream Rothschild Zionist controlled news media is being basically ignored. And so they don't know what to do anymore. They don't know what to do anymore. And so now suddenly all of it's like, these political folks that are running the country that are pushing this globalist agenda, they're having a conniption fit. When Great Britain voted to leave the EU last week, you know, the stock markets went into a meltdown, gold went through the roof, all this stuff happened, and a lot of that stuff was just being manipulated by the media because of the way they handled all of this. If they'd have said, well, not much will happen if England leaves the EU, nothing would have happened. But they pushed it and pushed it and made this huge downplay of what's going to happen on all of it, and then so they get a big kickback and blowback from it, which is great because at least we're standing up for our rights. Quick for another first story. DHS is quietly moving and releasing van loads of illegal aliens away from our border. This is crazy to me. This is absolute nuts that they're actually bringing in 100,000 Muslims every year through channels of the United Nations programs legally. But what they don't tell you is they're bringing in tens of thousands of additional unaccompanied illegal aliens and children into the United States every single year. Apparently that emphasis has been expanded to adults now. In 2016, as the U.S. government has been caught again and again and again illegally transporting illegal aliens all across the country while ignoring U.S. border laws. However, this time it's different. They're also bringing in Chinese, Romanians, in addition to Central Americans. And the list goes on and on as far as what's going on with this all over the country, all over the West, all over the United States, bringing in all of these diseases that we've eradicated decades ago in the United States, for which we no longer had to immunize children, which don't work anyhow, but the cleanliness, behavioral patterns, and all the things that make such a huge difference with some of these diseases. And the nutty part about all this is why are they doing this? Well, I'm going to tell you why they're doing it. They hate white people. Now, I know that may sound really weird to you, but I'm telling you the truth. They hate white people. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, there's an all-out war against white people, and I've talked about this before, and I'm going to discuss a little bit more detail tonight. Now, let me put it to you this way. If I was black, I'd be proud I was black. If I was Hispanic, I'd be proud I was Hispanic. If I was Chinese or Japanese, I would be proud of those. If I was from England or Great Britain or anywhere else, I'd be proud of my heritage. And all of those people are allowed to say they're proud of having their heritage, but if they're white, they're not allowed to say they're proud of being a white person. And so now you can look up Wikipedia, and I wanted to share this with you guys tonight. You can actually look up the term white privilege. And there's actually, I know you think I'm joking, but I'm not. White privilege is what they call, and it was so interesting because when I was in Europe and I was traveling, and so many of the women who were from the United States, when Sharon and I would talk to them, and we would ask them, you know, why in the world, you know, they were voting for Hillary when they told us they were. A lot of them would specifically say white man privilege. Now, but they don't understand because they're a white woman, they're also being included into this. And it's just almost unbelievable that you can actually look it up. Experts define white privilege as a combination of exclusive standards and opinions that are supported by whites in a way that continually reinforces social distance between the groups on the basis of power, access, advantage, majority status, control, choice, autonomy, authority, possessions, wealth, opportunity, materialistic acquisition, connection, access, preferential treatment, entitlement, and social standing. Okay, this is from different books. You can go look this up yourself. White privilege is a form of racism that both underlies and is distinct from institutional and overt racism. It underlies them in that they both are predicated on preserving the privileges of white people, regardless of whether the ages recognize this or not. So whether you're not, you know, you're white, you're privileged, it doesn't make a difference. You're still this. And it goes back to all the different times when all of this stuff started and all in the growth of this entire movement. This is what they do. Now, here's the truth of all of this. It's not just the white people they hate. They hate nationalism. They hate the fact that the United States was founded by white Christians. They hate that. They hate the fact that we're from a Christian background in the United States. They hate the fact that it was a Protestant work ethic that built the United States during the Industrial Revolution. They hate the fact that prior to 1913 and before the big influx of all these aliens and illegal immigrants from all over the world to the United States, the largest ethnic group in America was German. Germans are one of the strongest, hardest working groups of people in the entire planet. I know that because I was raised by them. I mean, so the whole thing is you got to work all the time. It's just how they work. And so all of these people that busted their butts, worked 70, 80, 100-hour weeks, started their businesses, the government doesn't like that. Remember when Obama came out at the beginning of his term and he goes, you didn't build that. You didn't do that. You didn't have anything to do with that. I mean, this is what they really believe. This is that Cloward and Piven mentality that the government has to control all social aspects of the development of the country, all of the businesses, all the jobs, all the money, all the income. It's a complete and total recipe and disaster for failure. It's communism. It's socialism. Every time it's ever been tried, from Venezuela to the Soviet Union, it's collapsed. It can't make it because everybody starts getting in the cart, stops working, and they want everybody else to pull the cart. And sooner or later, everybody gets tired of pulling the cart, and they jump in the cart, and nobody does anything, and everybody starves. This is something that's been tried repeatedly. It does not work. But this is what they wanted. They wanted Cloward and Piven. They want to get rid of the demographics of the United States, and they want to have an entire planet that's fully integrated with all the different peoples, and they don't want nationalism. Well, Great Britain just stuck their finger in their eye this past week and said, wait a minute, we do want nationalism. We're getting tired of the EU telling us to do all the time and controlling everything all the time. And we're tired of being controlled by the big bankers, the Rothschild cartel. Everybody's figuring this stuff out now. And so it's funny to me that finally, after all of these years of trying to integrate us with all of these different people from all over the world trying to destroy the entire culture of the United States, people are finally starting to wake up and say, wait a minute, there's nothing wrong with being white. Oh, that's right. I remember that now. You know, that's just okay. There's nothing wrong with being black or Hispanic. There's nothing wrong with any of these things. God made all of us in His image. We're all the same. But these guys, through their Tavistock programming institutes, have labeled us and put us into a box, and they've tried to change everything about us, and they're trying to do it through continual behavioral reinforcement and negative sanctions. That's how they're doing it. They've turned us all into a big group of lab rats. On Friday, on Thursday night of this week, in fact, it's on Hagmansville Archives right now. I was on this past week and I talked for 3 hours. In the first hour and a half, I talked about behavioral modification to the Tavistock Institute, which was originally founded from the shell shocking of the British and the German soldiers from World War I, and how they went into this state of just conscious unconsciousness, and they were just like dumbfounded because they've been shell-shocked, and they started working with what happened to that. We went into the fact that Freud was a Sabbatean, he was Luciferian, he was a total sexual pervert and weirdo, and because the Rothschilds are also Sabbateans, and because they also were sexual perverts and weirdos, they pushed him through academic media to become this big quote-unquote psychologist, and his cousin, who was Edward Bernays, was the man who brought us all of this advertising to bring the group think tank model into existence to try to force public opinion into whatever he molded it to be. Now, I did a whole show on that, so I'm not going to try to cover that again tonight, and a lot of you guys have already sent me emails on how much you enjoyed that show. Thank you. So that's what happened in the United States in the last 80, 90 years. Now, I can tell you this. Back when I was in college, you know, back in the early 70s, when a lot of this stuff was going on with this white privilege stuff, we had a whole bunch of laws that got passed at the university levels that if you were a white male, that you were put on the bottom of the list as far as college admission to academic programs such as certain graduate school programs. And that's still in effect today. They tried to get rid of it a few years ago. They couldn't get the Supreme Court upheld it. So the white privilege for men is complete and total nonsense. We get treated just as badly as everybody else gets treated now in the United States and by their government. So guys, don't believe any of this nonsense that you hear, and don't be ashamed that you're white, and don't run around apologizing that you're white, just like you shouldn't apologize if you're black or Hispanic or anything. Who cares? It's just God's way God made you. Now here's another article. It's the zombification of Americans millennials. And this is an interesting one because it goes into detail about how many millennials are actually glued to their smartphones. The nearly 4 in 10 millennials, 39%, so they interact more with their smartphones than they do anything else, including their parents, their friends, their children, or their coworkers. And guys, it's not getting worse, it's getting much, not getting better, it's getting much, much worse. This group of kids now, they're coming up with smartphones, they're 8, 9, 10 years of age, they live on their smartphones. It's like they live and die by their smartphones. I know Harrison was funny, he went to college 2 years ago. I've been in school now for 2 years, and when he first started college, he had like a flip phone, like an old phone, and he told me, he goes, Dad, I can't bring this to school. And I said, why not? He goes, if they see me on this phone, I'm going to get beat up. I said, you remember that, Sharon? He goes, I'm going to get beat up.
Oh, my God, that's so funny.
And I said, you're not going to get beat up, Harrison. I said, but, you know, you're right. You're not going to be politically correct with the proper phone. Well, you know, it's all because of advertising. It's all because of Edward Bernays. It's all because of what they pushed in this groupthink mindset, in this group model. And now what we've done, this is a great article that has just been written by Michael Schneider, and he goes, Generation Snowflake, Space, Safe Spaces, Trigger Warnings, and the Wussification of Our Young People by Michael Schneider. And I'm going to read you part of this, Sharon, and you'll get a kick out of it. He goes, why do so many of our young people instantly break down in tears the moment anything offends them? Have we raised an entire generation that's been so coddled and it's so spineless that it is completely incapable of dealing with the harsh realities of the modern world? At colleges and universities all over America, students are now demanding safe spaces where anything and everything that could possibly make them feel uncomfortable is banned. And trigger warnings are being placed on a great number of literary classics like The Great Gatsby because they might make the students feel unsafe. Claire Fox, the head of a think tank, again, here we go with the think tanks again, this is all back to Cloward and Piven, not Cloward and Piven, Tavistock, called the Institute of Idea has penned a coruscating critique of Generation Snowflake, the name given to growing group of youngsters who believe it's their right, It's their right to be protected from everything that they find unpalatable. She said British American universities are dominated by cabals of young women who are dead set on banning everything they find remotely offensive. Some time ago, Fox was giving a speech to a group of young women during which she brought up the subject of rape on campus, and she was completely stunned by what happened next. Some of the girls began to instantaneously sob and started hugging each other, while others started wildly shrieking. The majority appeared at least, well, shell-shocked. It was a distress of scale appropriate for some horrible disaster. However, I wasn't in a war zone or the scene of a pileup, but a school with all A-level students. What provoked such hysteria? Again, shell-shocked, Tavistock. This is how they wanted everybody to act. The hypersensitivity was prompted by the University of East Agla to outlaw sombreros in a Mexican restaurant because it may offend some. So they're setting up safe places. Here's what they do at Brown University, Ivy League school, best of the brightest minds. Here what they do at Brown University, one of the elite eight Ivy League universities. The New York Times reported that students have set up a safe space that offered calming music, cookies, Play-Doh, and a video of frolicking puppies to help students cope with the discussion on how colleges should handle sexual assault. So in other words, they've been put back into kindergarten so they can walk around so they avoid any type of trauma whatsoever. Sharon, what has happened to our youth, and why do you think this is happening with the kids today?
You know, Ted, I feel like I'm watching a comedy movie as you're describing all this. I mean, it's gotten so ridiculous. I mean, now I feel guilty for using my adult stressless coloring book, and yes, those are out now. They have them at Walmart. But I got one that was really, I'm an artist, so I really enjoyed it, but it's got a lot of scriptures and real pretty pictures, you know, you can, you know, color, but it actually helps relax you. But these people are living in Narnia. It's nauseating because we're just raising a bunch of weirdos. I mean, it's just
the truth.
It's just, I don't know what to say.
I need my video with puppies playing. I want my Play-Doh. These are college students, guys.
They probably need to have everybody gets a little stuffed animal so they can start petting it, you know, and rubbing its head. And I mean, it's insane. It's crazy. I mean, you know, this political correctness stuff, we were in church today and we're talking about political correctness versus biblical correctness, and I mean, it's to the point where, okay, if you get offended, too bad. I'm not worried about offending you. Now, I don't want to do it intentionally by being mean, but I'm over all that. I'm not a player in that game.
Well, you know, what's so funny to me is that we try not to say anything to anybody, and we won't stand for what we believe in. And because we don't stand for something, we fall for anything. And I've seen it repeatedly. I mean, you know, I find the Christians now who actually like Donald Trump, who realize that he's not a globalist, that he's a nationalist, that he is somebody who is going to hopefully do what he says he's going to do, but anything beats Clinton. I mean, it's like Jerry Falwell used to say, ABC, anyone but Clinton, okay? It's just one of those deals that we have to start get to a point in our lives that, you know, we stop being politically correct over these stupid things. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, you can't do anything on campus anymore. If you say anything to anybody that offends them, they can actually file a report. And you're called before, like, the dean. And you're given a warning that you caused this person to be uncomfortable. And if you do it again, you may be expelled. I mean, here's the thing. You go up to a girl and you ask her out on a date in college. And she says no. All right. Whatever. You see her again a couple months later, you ask her out on another date, figure she may have broken up with a boyfriend. Well, now she goes files a complaint on you that you're stalking her. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And no, it has gotten to that level. And you know, and then now you're being brought before the dean for stalking. And you're thinking to myself, all I did was ask her out on a date. And now pretty soon you start thinking, man, it's dangerous to date girls. I'm going to hang out with the guys. And you start getting more and more wussified. I mean, it gets like this over and over. Now, what are these people going to do when they get out into the real world and they don't have a safe place to go to, when they can't go to their job and go listen to go play with Play-Doh at their break and have puppies in the background running behind them? I mean, Sharon, what a group of wimps we're raising. I've got a friend of mine, and I love him. He's a great friend. He's like a brother to me. And he's got a son who's had some problems with drugs. kid's like 13 years old. He started on pot, moved to LSD. Who knows what else he's taken? And finally, they'd done something. They told him, 16-year-old male, right? And they told him they were going to have to send him away to like a rehab center to get better. Well, he started crying like a little baby girl, like he's like 6 years old, and would sob himself to sleep every night. Every night, crying himself like he's about to die, and you know, and sobbing himself to sleep. A 16-year-old male. Are you joking me? Now,
well,
mind
Ted,
you.
Now, isn't there estrogen built
yes,
up when you
have... That's what I was going to say. Mind you, that the estrogen will massively increase when you start smoking pot, giving you gynecomastia, which are man breasts is what they are. And so, yes, he could have had a large amount of estrogen in his system. But the point is, he didn't want to be, quote, offended by being sent away to be helped. So now he's in a full-blown drug rehab facility. And sadly... you know, I don't know if that's going to help him or not, because now he's hanging out with some really hardcore drug users, and it's only a 90-day program, but it's just one of those things. It's just who knows what's going to happen to him long-term-wise, because the reality is this. We've got a whole group of kids out there right now that have been so messed up with their smartphones, who've not learned to interact with anybody besides a telephone and a gadget or Facebook, or where they have a distance from people. They don't know how to do live interaction. It's almost like they're in a computer simulation game, and they're a participant through the game, and they're not really living the life and having the interaction with the folks in the game. That's why so many of these millennials are still living at home in their mama's basement wearing their high school clothes. I mean, it's like a complete and total disaster for the United States, what we've raised. That's because of the university systems. You know, a lot of these guys, these professors now are having to be paid off with, you know, large retirement bonuses to get out of the system when they're 65 years of age, because they're so comfortable in this ivy tower of political correctness with the universities, they don't want to retire, leaving them in there for the long term to bring these kids in this horrible, horrible thing they've already done for the last 40, 50 years. I know I was a professor for 2 years at the collegiate level. And I remember students would come up to me, it's been 36 years ago I was doing that. Kids would come up to me years after I had, you know, been in the class with them, and they would tell me, you know, Professor Brower, you were the only person that we ever had, that we ever learned anything from. You were the only person that told us the truth. You were the only person that told us not to get student loans. You were the only person that told us, you know, everything that you told us was true. Everything. And you're the only person that we learned anything from other than 4 years of the university system that was practical. Now, guys, that's sad, isn't it? That's something I'm being told years later after I've been a college professor. And I've often wondered what happened to those kids now, because, Lord, they were, how old was I? I was 25 years old when I was doing that. And so, I guess these kids would be now, this is 30-something. So these kids are like 20 years old. So these kids would be in their 50s now. Because, you know, now we're all I was pretty much their age anyhow, like 7-8 years older than them. And so now they'd all be in their 50s, mid-50s. I wonder how many of them actually remember my classes that I taught. I bet you
I guarantee they remember you, Ted. I guarantee them. way too many professors that just are so boring and just want to get the last ounce of, you know, flesh out of you. I mean, it's just, right. You know, they remember you. I guarantee they remember you.
Next story, the Supreme Court just created a full-blown police state. The end of the USA cannot be far off. This is an article by Armstrong. This was a case that was cited June the 20th, 2016. The Supreme Court ruling in Utah versus Threif awarded the police total freedom to stop any citizen at any time to do whatever they desire. The Supreme Court determined that the poisonous fruit of a police officer's stop of a citizen can be used against them at trial. That means we are in Nazi Germany. This has wiped out, in reality, any constitutional protection that you thought you had. I mean, this is a sad day for the United States, for the Supreme Court has officially created a full-blown police state and clearly has no intention of honoring why this nation began the entire American Revolution to prevent illegal searches that allowed the king to look for anything he could to prosecute the citizens. It goes on to one of the dissenting opinions was, and if Scalia would have been there, it would have been closer, but I still think they would have gotten this through. But Justice Sotomayor, which surprises me, actually went against this and basically, I'm reading this. It says, even if you're innocent, you will now join 65. This is what Sotomayor wrote. Even if you're innocent, you will now join the other 65 million Americans with an arrest record and experience the civil death of discrimination by employers, landlords, and whoever else conducts a background check. She concluded, and I must agree. By legitimizing the conduct that produces this double consciousness, This case tells everyone, white, black, guilty, innocent, that an officer can verify your legal status at any time. It says that your body is subject to invasion while courts excuse the violation of your rights. It implies that you are not a citizen of a democracy, but the subject of a carceral state just waiting to be cataloged. We must not pretend that the countless people who are routinely targeted by police are isolated. They are the canaries in the coal mine who death civil and literally, they literally warn us that no one can breathe in this atmosphere. They're the ones who recognize that unlawful police stops, corrodes all of our civil liberties, and threaten all of our lives until their matters, until their voices matter to our justice system, will continue to do anything about it. Guys, what this just said is that they can stop you now if they want to do it, the Supreme Court, in a traffic check. They can take you to a facility. They stop you over on Interstate 4 or Interstate 10 or Interstate 95 or whatever name of your interstate is, and they bring all of the cars into a rest area, and they have the tent set up, and they decide they can ask you questions and you have to answer them, and now they can search you if they think anything you're doing wrong, and they can take you back into the tent and strip you. That's what this thing just proved. That's what they just did here.
Wow.
It gave them the right to do anything they wanted to do to you, and it completely stopped search and seizure and due process. And now, regardless of how they stopped you or whatever it was stopped for, they can use anything they find against you in a court of law. Is no longer considered poisoned fruit and cannot be put into the court. This is exactly what King George did. He would break into people's houses with his military, dig through all of their stuff, ransack the house, trying to find stuff, until finally the colonists said, the heck with this garbage, we're not going to put up with it anymore. And so we had the American Revolution. This is where we're going to, with a full-blown police state. I don't believe that the Nazis had the ability to do this, but I don't know, because my mom never told me they did stuff like this in Germany. But this is some of the nuttiest stuff that I've ever read, and sadly about it is this has received almost no information in the media whatsoever about this. By the way, one more update on the Religion of Peace. The Religion of Peace has killed 2,230 people in the past 30 days, and there have been 226 terror attacks in 32 countries, including the U.S., from Muslims in the last 30 days. What Barack Hussein Obama will not tell you is at least 226 attacks have occurred over the past 30 days by Islamic jihadists in 32 different countries, including the U.S., and after the Orlando massacre, with at least 2,230 people have been brutally slaughtered, over 2,200 people have been injured by the so-called Religion of Peace. While Obama attacks guns and claims we need strength and courage to change our attitudes towards gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community, he makes no mention of the fact that the Islamic terrorists are killing gays across the globe. He also does not mention they need to change their attitudes, nor does he even acknowledge that the attack happened in Orlando was an Islamic terrorist attack. A Religion of Peace. I tell you what, I'm not seeing it. Sharon, what's your first story for tonight, sweetie?
Okay, this is really interesting from EcoWatch. 2.6 million dead bees delivered to EPA headquarters. I found this really interesting, and I'm really glad to hear that they're doing something. A truck full of dead bees made its final stop at a rally outside the headquarters of the United States Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, on Wednesday, culminating a coast-to-coast tour to raise awareness about recent massive declines in pollinators. While the millions of dead bees stayed in the truck, advocates and beekeepers delivered more than 4 million signatures urging an immediate ban on bee-killing pesticides. One culprit in the bee die-off is the widely used class of pesticides called neonicotinoids. The science is clear and convincing. To be truly effective, we need a nationwide policy to protect our pollinators before the crisis gets completely out of control, said Dell Ann Healy, sponsor of Maryland's Pollinator Protection Act, the first bill passed in the U.S. to eliminate consumer use of the pesticides neonicotinoids. So I thought this was really interesting, Ted, because we're seeing a decrease. We have a small orchard at our home, and I enjoy, you know, going out there. And the other day, I saw a bee on the tree, and I end up running in the house. Ted, I saw a bee. You know, I remember growing up, bees were everywhere. Ted. And it's so sad to see this happen. But I'm just glad that they're taking action now and getting, you know, the first bill got passed just recently.
Me too, Sharon. I know we had on our lemon trees, we have three lemon trees in the yard, and we had literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of blossoms, but no bugs, no insects. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, we've got like out of the hundreds and hundreds of blossoms, these trees should be covered in fresh lemons. We probably got 20 or 30 lemons on three trees, like 10 lemons a tree. I mean, it's awful. And the sad part about it is it's not getting any better. You're almost going to have to go out there now with a pollination brush, which I will do next time, and pollinate the stuff yourself. You go from, you know, from plant to plant to plant to plant, just dusting pollen on each other to pollinate everything. And it's really, really sad that you're having to do this manual pollination to get more growth on the trees. And it's not going to get any better, because remember, a lot of the GMO crops actually have, you know, insect poisons built in. They're actually labeled as pesticides. Okay. The crops are, the seeds are. And so what happens as soon as the bug comes in to try to pollinate it, they die. And so this is the biggest thing we have going on with these bees right now. And of course we've got the chemtrails. We've got the HARP. We've got all of this stuff going on here in Florida. They decided we weren't going to get any rain for 3 weeks. So they started just spraying us like we were a bunch of insects down here. And we had no rain for 3 weeks, just hardly any. And all of a sudden, the last 2 days, they decided to go ahead and stop spraying us. And now we're being inundated with rain. I mean, we almost took a lightning strike today, because they pent up so much energy in the atmosphere when they do this, that when it finally does start raining, you get these violent thunderstorms. You know, last year we had flooding 3 times here at the house, and we haven't had that since 2004, when they sent 3 hurricanes over in 6 weeks. So it's been interesting. Here's another article that I've been talking about for years, and I wanted to just fuss about this for a second. Catholic priests in Montreal, this is from The Guardian, have now been banned from being alone with children. It's gotten so bad that the Catholic priests are such stinking perverts in so many of these parishes, and they're being moved around from parish to parish because they like to sodomize these little boys. They're now being banned from being alone with children by the legal authorities and by the law. A Catholic priest in Montreal will be banned from being alone with children to provide a safety net against allegations of abuse. I mean, and Archbishop Christian Lapin has also issued a decree to implement this policy, which also covers lay workers and volunteers, which is not the problem, by the way, though that can be sometimes. According to the decree, the move was to ensure the safety and integrity of the people to whom we bring the gospel message and offer our pastoral care. But it was, I mean, in an accompanying letter, Lepin said, events brought to light the horrific reality of abuse of minors. You know, events, are you kidding me? You guys have been sodomizing little boys for centuries. And it's gotten really, really bad in the last 50 or 60 years. And, you know, so the sad part about all of this is that the fact that the Catholic Church has been so tardy as far as having to do this. The Vatican said that 2 years ago that they had already got rid of almost 1,000 priests, and more than another 2,500 have been sanctioned. That's almost 4,000 priests. And those are the ones they know about, Sharon. I mean, this is absolutely nuts that these Catholic priests, you know, here's the thing, guys. If you're that big of a stinking pervert, and you want to be a priest, okay? Why don't you go out back and just hang yourself? You know, I mean, are you that weird and that messed up with your Luciferian ideology that you apparently have taken in, that you're not a man of the cloth at all anymore, and that all you want to do is abuse little children? Bunch of sickos? I mean, you guys nauseate me. I told you guys a story a couple years ago. We were coming off a mountain hike up in North Carolina, the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, and I walked in and started talking to two priests on the doggone trail. And, you know, they weren't dressed in their priestly garments, but they were walking, you know, in jeans and t-shirts, and we started talking to them. They were telling me how great and how wonderful they were. And I said, guys, I said, let me tell you something. I know you guys are Catholics and all that, but when are you going to get a handle on these sodomites, these pedophiles in the priesthood? Some statistics indicate that 50% of these priests are basically pedophiles. 50%. And they go, well, we know it's a real problem. I said, you know it's a real problem? Why don't you just fix the problem and get rid of these whack bags? And they said, well, the problem is we don't have enough priests for all the parishes all over the country anymore, because so many people are not going to the priesthood anymore. And so, you know, we don't know, the Catholic Church doesn't know what to do. Well, let me tell you something, guys. It's not going to help your attendance when the people are scared their children are going to get sodomized if they come to church. So, bunch of weirdos. This new pope, don't even get me started on the new pope. I need to do a whole show on the new pope. Sharon, what's your next story?
Okay, well, apparently we're celebrating a birthday here. The world's oldest bodybuilder just turned 80 years old, Ernestine Shepherd. She started bodybuilding actually when she was 56 years old due to high blood pressure. And her motto is, just never give up. And my motto is, it's never too late. You know, you're never too old to get started. If someone can be 80 years old in bodybuilding, by the way, she looks phenomenal, anybody can do it. And, you know, so many people have excuses about going to the gym or working out, and then they start getting weaker, less flexible, then they start breaking bones. And, you know, I like my mother, she's doing the Tai Chi, I guess it is, just a real easy, you know, stretching and movements and stuff. And she actually is getting more flexible. But here this lady's 80 years old. She's actually got some abs. She's got muscles. And it just shows you, and it motivates me, Ted, because people, well, for instance, the other day we're having to fill in, you know, for Austin and help him out a lot. And so I actually went into the office and was answering phone calls. And someone, I answered the phone, and apparently it was someone that listened to the show, really nice gentleman, and his wife's in the background. Ask her what she does to look like she does. And I just start laughing. And I said, you know, it's so funny, and thank you for the compliment. But people don't realize that it does take a lot of effort. But the main thing is 80% of what you look like is diet.
That's right.
And you've got to get the mindset that the sugars and the sweets and all that, if you really want to be in good shape and have tone in your body and lean muscle mass, you got to really get off the sweets and the sugars most of the time. Eating lean protein, our fit food protein is awesome. We drink it every day. And just staying on a really clean diet. And, you know, if you do this and get in the habit of doing this like about 2 or 3 weeks, it almost starts becoming a habit. And then it's easier and easier and easier. But don't think just because you're 45 or 55 or 65 or 75, oh, it's too late. It's never too late. Just start where you are. And I've been preaching that for years, but this just really motivates me because this lady was born in 1936, and it just really motivates me, Ted, when you see somebody that age that, hey, says, you know, it's not too late to change, and it really never is.
No, you're absolutely right, Sharon. In fact, you're 59 and I'm 60 years old now. And, you know, just the other day, well, about 3 weeks ago, I started doing deep knee bends again. I had re-injured an old back injury back 2008, and I'd really gotten kind of slack at training my legs very heavy because I don't like compression exercises anyhow as far as squats because they're just very dangerous for your spine and for your hips. So I got to a point where I started doing like legs and lats on the same day. Well, now anybody who knows who works out hard, you really can't do legs and lats on the same day. It's more of a conditioning exercise if you're doing that because you're simply not going to be able to work intensely on that many body parts at once. And so this past, about a month ago, I started doing deep knee bends every single day. Just, you know, with a wooden bar, no weight. And I started getting up to, you know, several hundred reps a day, you know, like 40, 50, 60 reps a set, just doing deep knee bends parallel. And finally, I thought, you know, my legs are doing pretty good. My back feels pretty good. So yesterday, for the first time, I went back into the gym and I did my old superset leg workout, which is off my advanced men's program. And it was amazing. My heart rate got up. I felt absolutely wonderful. I was sweating for like 2 hours after the workout. And I thought, wow, this is the way I used to work out. I'm going to start doing this again. I just don't use as much heavy weight at this point because that was the first time I did it. And what that entails of is I do 4 sets of adductor abductors. I just do those together. You know, do one set, one machine, doing the other machine. And then I superset leg extension, superset it with leg press, 4 sets of each, 12 to 15 reps a set. And then I superset another different type of leg press with a leg curl machine, 4 reps, 15 reps each, 15 reps a set. And so you end up with like, you know, 16 reps sets on with that one exercise, those two extra 4 exercises. It's about 24 sets, and I threw a couple more sets of squats in there. And I tell you what, my whole energy levels have been going through the roof, my brain, my focus, everything's going better. And I told you yesterday, you know, I said, look, I'm going to go ahead and start doing just legs, a day, cut back to 2 times a week per body part, and go ahead and start, you know, just really increasing the intensity of the training. And the reason you do that is that it massively increases your testosterone levels, and it also forces your body to release a lot of human growth hormone when you do that. It also helps make more nitric oxide. And so now I'm also increasing my HGH stimulate again because I want to go ahead and, you know, do all that. So HGH stimulate is a product that we have in the office that works to help to burn body fat and cellulite. It stimulates the body's pituitary gland to increase human growth hormone naturally. It is not an injectable HGH. I don't use that. I don't believe in that. Your body can produce plenty of HGH if you push your body the right way, which is what this 80-year-old bodybuilder was doing. So, again, you go to healthmasters.com website, learn all about this kind of stuff, sign up for our newsletters, and just enjoy yourself and just read through the articles. There's hundreds and hundreds of articles in there and hyperlinks that you can go to the other folks' articles at healthmasters.com. You can sign up for the newsletter. We'll send it to you every week. If we have specials or sales going on, we'll sign up and do all of that. So, guys, we appreciate you, and we're here to support you guys, and thank you for supporting us. Now, here's another article. The amount of stuff being bought, sold, and shipped around the U.S. hits the lowest level in 6 years. Now, guys, that's not good. You know, this is again by Michael Schneider. It's a Cass Freight Index. It's based on real transactions conducted by real shipping companies. And what the Cass Freight Index is telling us about the state of the U.S. economy in 2016 lines up perfectly with all the other statistics. And they're clearly indicating we've now shifted back into recession mode. Now, this is in spite of the trillions of dollars of quantitative easing we've had. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, they threw in $17 trillion, they wouldn't tell us, or $16 trillion. The Federal Reserve wouldn't tell us where the money went when Paul audited them, when Ron Paul had the partial audit of the Federal Reserve, which of course went into its member banks to buy up the New York Stock Exchange, the German Stock Exchange, so they could own all of these corporations and organizations around the world. And that's one of the reasons the EU voted to get out of this mess. And we need to vote to get out of the mess. And I believe if we stand behind Trump in this November election, now that he's in the Republican nominee for president, and we all get behind him and just say, hey, look, we're going to go ahead and we're going to, you know, stay with Trump. Because the truth of the matter is, and we were talking about this at the beginning of the show, a lot of Christians use as an excuse that they're going to vote for Trump because he's the lesser of two evils. Okay? Well, don't do that. I mean, if that's the reason you're doing that, don't do that. You know, just realize that he's actually somebody who's telling us the truth. I mean, you know, if you want to vote third party, okay, I voted third party a lot. I have. This is not that election. Okay.
No,
this is
not
it. Okay. We've actually got a candidate who the globalists are scared of. I mean, these Rothschild boys are actually, you know, on the ropes right now, you know, with global opinion. And we have to make sure that we keep this thing going about these international banking cartels that are running the planet. They're stinking. They're a bunch of mafia folks is what they are. They're running it like with mafia tactics. I mean, threatening people and everything else. They vote a certain way. It's absolutely ridiculous that this is actually going on. So Michael Schneider covered this really, really well. I need to bring him on the show one time, Sharon. He writes so much and he's such a good writer. I had him when I actually interviewed him on the Power Hour, and he's actually had a huge, you know, claim to fame here with all these different people that are coming in here. So here's another interesting article. The French cops claim that they're exhausted because of all the anti-government protests and that they're tired of having to work so much and they don't know what they're going to do. Months and months of demonstrations and violence have left the French police begging for mercy. A heated combination of protests against controversial changes in France's unemployment laws and outbreaks of violence by Russian and British football fans has taken its toll. And so they're actually so upset in France, I can pretty much guarantee you. Now, we have multiple other countries that are petitioning to leave the European Union now. And gosh, guys, more power to them. I hope they can get out of that mess they've got themselves in. Like, I hope we can extricate ourselves from the Federal Reserve. What's your next story, Sharon?
Well, this one starts out kind of strange, but it's a very interesting study. Urine in every member of the European Parliament tested found to be heavily contaminated with glyphosate weed killer. In a bid to show the public that there's no reason to be concerned about exposure to popular herbicide glyphosate, members of the European Parliament volunteered to take a urine test to see if glyphosate was in their system, as reported by the reader-supported news. And what had happened, from 13 different European Union countries participated in the test to see if they'd been exposed to the cancer-linked weed killer. According to the test results from an accredited biocheck laboratory in Germany, all participants excreted glyphosate in urine. And it's just fascinating to see that, you know, here we're so concerned about it in the United States, and we've been saying that, well, over in Europe, it's not that bad of a problem. But apparently it is, because this test showed that the glyphosate is entering our bodies not only from drinking water, but from food chain, as everyone tested was way above the limit of residues of pesticides in drinking water.
Well, no.
What do you think about that?
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, this ties right back together with the pesticide use killing the bees. It also ties right back together with all of these different pesticides, you know, and all of this glyphosate that's causing all of these different diseases. I mean, these diseases that have been linked directly to pesticides into exposure to this stuff include Alzheimer's disease. Now, this is a progressive brain-destroying disease and report affects up to 5.3 million Americans. And it's been directly linked now to pesticides. I mean, it's tied together. Cancer. Many cancers have been linked to pesticides, including brain, bone, liver, pancreas, bladder. I mean, incredible. Birth defects. We've seen this with these children who are born with these small, the microencephaly with these small heads. It's been linked to pesticides. They don't want to talk about it. I mean, so you're looking at, you know, all kinds of problems with babies' intestines and other organs outside the abdominal area. It occurs more frequently in babies with mothers who live within 25 kilometers where pesticide atrazine is being used, which has been contaminated in all the wells now. It also turns little girls or little boys into little girls because it's an estrogen compound. And this is what happens with all the plastics, the household cleaners, the chemicals. They disrupt their hormonal disruptors, their endocrine disruptors. We've talked about
that. I find it fascinating. You know, back, 50 years ago, people had well water, and they just drank it, and it didn't seem to be that bad. I mean, you know, if you had well water, that's the kind of water you want to drink. And now you've actually got to filter your well water or either have it go through the distillation unit. And it's sad because well water used to be considered, you know, on a farm, you know, we just drink our well water. You know, it tastes like iron, but, you know, we drink it.
Well, but now the problem they've learned now over the years, though, too, Sharon, is that the well water has also been linked to calcium deposits in the body and hardening of the arteries, especially if you live in an area that has a lot of calcium carbonate in the water. So, yes, well water used to be used, and you didn't have to worry about pesticides and the runoff of this kind of mess, but you still didn't realize that you were getting this. So the calcium buildup in your arteries. So we always tell folks to use one of our Health Masters distillers. And that you actually, water goes in one side. We have a countertop. When you pour a gallon on one side, a gallon comes out the other side, all distilled and it's clean. You won't believe the stuff that's in the bottom of it. Other things can cause other problems with pesticides. They can cause reproductive issues, asthma and allergies, diabetes, Parkinson's disease. I mean, the Parkinson's disease is really, really big because this is a neurodegenerative disease. And a lot of it has been linked now to organopesticides and phosphates, developing learning disorders in children. All of these things have been directly linked to pesticides. So guys, I mean, you know, you got to think through this for a little bit. You know, you really want to be drinking water that you don't know what's in it. It's really, really important that you guys stop doing this and stop start thinking about what you're putting into your body and cleaning it all up. I mean, this is one of the things and one of the reasons that Austin has recovered so quickly from this pericarditis and is doing so well, because we eat so clean, so incredibly clean. And see, if you don't eat clean, you know, it's not going to happen. Now, here's another article. Why young Americans are giving up on capitalism. Now, I want to kind of go slowly through this one, Sharon, to get your feedback on this one. Why young Americans are giving up on capitalism. Should we really be surprised that young people are rejecting the economic status quo? This is an article by Kenzior. It says, imagine that you're 20 years old. You're born in 1996. You were 5 years old with 9/11. And for as long as you can remember, the United States has been at war. I mean, think about that. Your whole life you've been at war. When you were 12 in 2008, the entire global economy collapsed after years of bluster and bravado from the President George W. Bush, who encouraged consumerism as a response to terrorism. It seems your country was weaker than you thought. In America, the bottom falls out. In 2009, politicians claimed that the recession is over, but the hardship is not. Wages are stagnant or falling. The cost of health care, child care, tuition continue to rise. Middle class jobs are replaced with low-paying service work. The baby boomers tell you there is a way out. You have to go to college because you can get a good job. But then you go to college, you have a whole bunch of student debt, and now you can't get a job even with a college degree. The college graduates, you know, are drowning in student debt, working for minimum wage, or toiling in unpaid internships. There's a lot of unpaid internships. Prestigious jobs are increasingly clustered in cities where rent has tripled or quadrupled. Every now and then, people revolt. You see, Occupy Wall Street captivates one's attention, and that's in for a few months, and that goes away. So you really don't know what to do. In 2016, pundits declare your hardship an aberration. Unemployment is low, which is not. It's over 100 million people not getting a job. It's all a bunch of lies. At first, you think it's a mistake until you realize the government counts everyone working part-time or gig jobs making salaries below the poverty line as employed. Is any wonder that half of the 18 to 29-year-olds in America say they do not support capitalism? Half. I mean, they want some form of communism. Does it mean that the youth of America are getting ready to hand over the private property to the state and to start using gulags? Capitalism, in other words, holds less appeal in an era where the invisible hand feels like a death grip. As a consequence, these basic tenets of America work life, won by labor movements in the early half of the 20th century, are now deemed radical. In this context, Bernie Sanders, whose policies echo those of the New Deal Democrats, can be deemed a socialist or leading a revolution. That's why he's got so many young people, you know, supporting him. Policies like a 15-hour minimum wage brought to mainstream attention not by Sanders, by striking fast food workers last year. We live in an era where heated rhetoric battles are fought over terms that have lost clear meaning in an attempt to placate an angry populace. All three major candidates, Sanders, Trump, and Clinton, at various times positioned themselves as anti-establishment. Well, Clinton is not, by the way. It's this rhetorical mass and morass, the debate over whether young Americans support socialism and capitalism. This is what's happened with Bernie Sanders. This is why he's got so much traction. And guys, listen to me. You know, when you get the banks to come in with globalism, and they fracture the United States, and they take the good-paying industrial jobs and the manufacturing jobs, and they replace it with service sector jobs, and they bring in NAFTA, and the Pacific trade deal and the Atlantic trade deal. This is all done by corporations that are being owned and managed by the big banks. This is who's doing it. These guys are basically the scum of the earth. They don't consider you or me to be worth anything. In fact, they don't even consider us to be human beings. They consider us to be goyim. Or they consider our DNA to be inferior. They consider us to be just red ants, to be extinguished, you know, or to be bought and sold to slaughter as animals. They don't see us as anything. They don't care. And it's all about greed. See, what we've done, we've replaced a free enterprise in the work system of the United States, the Protestant work ethic. My grandfather came over, I think it was in 1880, from Germany. And he was visiting friends in Iowa. He had been raised on a farm in Germany. We've had a farm in our family over there for 400 years. And he came over to the United States because he wanted to be free and get away from all of the regulations in Europe. And he got here, you know, after the Civil War, and was visiting my friends and my relatives in Iowa and in Chicago, got on a train and wanted to find farmland, good farmland. He found a little place called Eldora, Iowa, right in the middle of the state, and pulled a whistle stop on the train. They'd let him out in the middle of a cornfield with deep black dirt. He went up to the farmhouse, didn't even speak English. Hopefully they spoke a little German. A lot of German farmers were that day, and started working for them. Within a few years, they wanted to sell the farm, and he bought the farm from them. Before it was over with, he had 1,500 acres of farms, of farmland that he owned, and they were farming. Then the Great Depression hit, and he had to break the farm up into the family members, his five children. Each of them got a section of it, and then basically they worked the farm themselves to make sure they could make the payments on all of it. And you know, he was very, very wealthy. My father was wealthy. And what's crazy about all of this, that's the American dream. You know, going to college and finding out because you're white, you can't get into graduate school. Are you kidding me? Because you have a 4.0. Let's say you have a 4.0 and you can't get in because you're white. And you're like, what happened? Well, that's not the American dream that my grandfather and my father were raised in. See, and this is the problem that we have in the United States now. It's called reverse discrimination. And we brought all these other countries in to the United States now. And they don't even know what the Protestant work ethic even means. I mean, these guys are living in hellhole third world countries, a lot of them, you know, in Mexico, where you have to run around with armed guards with you when you're horseback riding so you're not going to be abducted for a ransom. This is what happened to us a few years ago when the horses had to walk through streets covered in trash and garbage because they don't have garbage pickup down there, and they just dump the garbage on the streets. Then all of the South American countries that we visited have been like that, every single one of them without an exception. And then you get to Africa. Oh my gosh, and you see Egypt and how they live over there, and you see what's going on and how horrible those countries are. These are the people that they're bringing into the United States to dilute our work ethic here. That's why capitalism doesn't work. It's Cloward and Piven. They've come in and they've diluted the ability of what we've been able to do in the United States by their rules and their government regulations. And so they've taken our jobs and they've shipped them overseas. This is the big government. George Bush is just as much to blame as everybody else, and his father, Clinton, has. Because they're all globalists. They want us under a one-world United Nations flag, and they want us to be controlled by a one-world government with a one-world religion called Satanism. That's what they want. And that's what they've done. They've done everything they can to destroy the American dream, to the point now where 50% of the young people want to have Bernie Sanders in, because they want a communist, socialistic job opportunity in which everybody gets a, quote, fair share. You know, when Obama comes in and says, you didn't build that. Guys, the regulation that we have to go through owning a business for the past 36 years has increased exponentially. It got so ridiculous just doing payroll that I had to hire a payroll service company just to keep the records perfect so I wouldn't have any problems with all that. You know, all of that has cost more and more and more money to stay in business. See, that's what happens in the United States when you start getting completely overrun by big government. You know, Reagan said, you know, what was his one famous quote, that when the government says they're here to help, you need to run away because it's not true, because they're not going to help you with anything. They can't do anything. They can't create anything. Look at this disaster with these solar panels, with Solyndra, with Obama. All of this stuff has been a giant debacle with his entire administration because he's a Kenyan communist is what he is. Saul Alinsky, so is rules for radicals. The same thing with Hillary Clinton. They're all being controlled by the Rothschild banking empire through George Soros. And, you know, that's what they're doing. And they see, guys, it's time that we woke up and we realized that these international bankers and corporations that are ruling the United States through their money and through their giving to all these political campaigns, they need to be told no. They need to be said no. You're not going to do this to us anymore. And if we can do that, we can reboot. Now, sure, it's going to be difficult when they first reboot everything and they go back to the United States having its own currency and not being through the Federal Reserve and everything else like we had back before 1913. But, guys, it can reboot very quickly if we bring that Protestant work ethic back. Well, they don't want it to reboot. That's why they're bringing in tens of millions of immigrants into the United States, because they don't want it to reboot. They're bringing in tens of millions into Europe and into Germany to destroy it. They want a feudal system back. That's going to be the masses being controlled by the one world religion and the one world government, in which they're going to have the hierarchy, which are the elites, which are the royalty, and everybody else is going to be serfs and servants. And they can come up to you like King George used to do and go through your home and do it because you weren't sovereign. You weren't a sovereign citizen. And now when we rebelled against England, we made ourselves all sovereigns, which means we made ourselves equal with King George. Well, they don't want that. They don't want us to be equal with anybody. And that Rothschild banking cartel that's taken over England during the Napoleonic Wars, as far as the money supply of England, has put a stranglehold, this giant vampire squid that Rolling Stone called it, to the point now that our children no longer believe in capitalism. And quite frankly, I don't blame them. We've got to get somebody in here, get these socialists out of the White House. We got to believe God Almighty that this is going to happen. We've got to get the preachers on the pulpits to get their stupid lace off their panties and start telling the truth. Guys, we love you. I appreciate you. Sharon, thanks so much for being on with me again tonight. And guys, thank you for supporting Health Masters. All of you just bought a bottle of multiple vitamins from us, just a bottle of multiples. We can fund the show. And guys, I'll never turn it into an infomercial. We love you. Keep praying for Austin. We'll be live again tomorrow afternoon, hopefully with Austin, from 3 to 4 Eastern Standard Time. God bless you. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Bye-bye.